This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to our big 2 at 2 coming up here in just a little bit. Plus, a little bit later on, I'll pay off a couple of these teases we still have to catch up on from earlier. Is the worst thing for Major League Baseball actually the best thing? We'll get to that in a little bit. And we'll circle back to our conversation with Jeremy Schilling from earlier this afternoon. It's been announced. It's official. We got the match number 5 after Thanksgiving. Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau. I have some thoughts on that as well that we'll get to later on. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. You can also find the show available on demand online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. The podcasts are available there. Or download our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and through the free app, not only can you listen to the show from anywhere in the world, but you can also listen on demand from anywhere in the world. The podcasts are available through our app as well. Download the app in the App Store today. Just search ESPN Charleston. Oh, it's a great day today. I got all my Red Sox gear on as they knock the Yankees out. We got more to do in baseball. Plus, there was some breaking news today in the NFL. So, Joe, as always, we get you caught up in the final hour on some of the biggest stories of the day, if you weren't with us earlier, with our Big 2 at 2.
The Big 2 at 2, where Luke recaps the two biggest stories of the day right here on the Morrow Midday Show.
Number one is the breaking news that came down less than an hour ago, and it's the fact that the Carolina Panthers have traded for Stephon Gilmore after initial reports this morning that he was released by the Patriots. Guess he wasn't. They ended up working out a deal and sent him to Carolina. Couple of things with this. Right, first from the Patriots side, why would they do this? Well, Gilmore is a free agent at year's end. Apparently did not want to restructure his contract or even talk about reworking a deal or signing an extension. Talks broke down between the Patriots and Gilmore about moving forward. Additionally, the Patriots need salary cap space. They figure, yeah, we could cut some other guys, or we could get rid of this guy who's still injured, doesn't want to be here beyond this season anyways. We're going to save $6 million in the process, so let's move on from him. That's what they did, and in the end, they ended up trading him to the Panthers. Now, Carolina, from their perspective, only had to give up a 6-round draft pick. Why? For a 4-time Pro Bowler? Because the Patriots had no leverage. Here's a guy, they had to get rid of him because of the salary cap implications. He doesn't want to be there anyways, at least not beyond this season. He's also coming off of an injury. He's still rehabbing, so you know it's not even like he's going to come out here and play on Sunday or you know join them today. So they didn't have a whole lot of leverage. They at least get something, a 6-round pick. I love this for the Panthers. How impactful will Gilmore be this year? I'm not sure. But I love, if I'm a Panthers fan, I love that they're going for it, that they're taking a risk, that they're being aggressive. That's what we want as sports fans. We want our team to be invested, to make these types of moves. There's nothing more frustrating than an owner or a team sitting on their hands and not spending some of the money, and when somebody becomes available, they're not even in on the bidding or you know trying to sign them or trade for somebody who's on the market. That's the most frustrating thing as a sports fan. So here for the Panthers, they make 2 trades in the last week for a couple of cornerbacks after the J.C. Horn trade. That's what I would love to see as a Panthers fan. It's a message from the Panthers that they're sending that, hey, we're going for it. We're off to a 3-1 start. We lost J.C. Horn. Okay, we're going to go out and find some other players to help replace him. This is a big move because it's low risk, high reward. How impactful will Gilmore be? I'm not sure. He's 31 years old, right? Cornerbacks, when you get into your 30s, that can be tough. We saw it with Darrell Revis. We're seeing it with Richard Sherman. You cross that 30 threshold. You're in the league for, you know, almost a decade. You slow down. You're not quite the same player. It can be tough. You know, Terrence Newman had to move to safety once he got a little bit older. It's challenging. So for Gilmore, coming off an injury, had a down season a year ago, 31 years old. I don't know what the Panthers will truly get from him this season. Free agent at the end of the year. If you don't sign him to a contract, he may only be with the Panthers for whatever it is, 12 games. But again, you only gave up a six-round draft pick, and it's going to cost you about $6 million this year. And the Panthers have the second most salary cap space in the league. So there's really no risk involved. And you're almost buying Gilmore low here and hoping that he returns to where he was when he was healthy and playing well 2 years ago. Plus, South Carolina guy, played for the Gamecocks. He's from Rock Hill, so it's kind of a return home as well. Love this move for the Panthers. Is he going to be an impactful player? I'm not sure. But you're not giving up anything. You're not taking much of a gamble here. So you might as well try. And best case scenario, if it works out, yeah, you're getting a four-time Pro Bowler who, when healthy, was one of the best cornerbacks in the league. That's what you're adding. To replace J.C. Horn, who's going to have a good career but still was just a rookie, you're adding a veteran who's been to the Pro Bowl four times now to replace him. I like this move from the Panthers. What are we going to get out of Gilmore? We'll see, but it's worth taking a shot. And Carolina saying, hey, we're 3-1. You may think we're overachieving. We think we can do something. We're going for it. Let's go out and get a couple of more cornerbacks. Let's improve our secondary and try to get even better so that we can battle Tom Brady with this defense and beat the Buccaneers. Story number two today is last night's AL wildcard game, the Red Sox beating the Yankees at Fenway. Playoff baseball is fantastic, as I laid out earlier, but tension that it builds. What hurts the sport in the summer months and a long season helps the sport this time of year. That the pauses in the action in May, April, June, July, it's boring. But in October, it's tension building as you wait for each and every pitch of a big game. My takeaways from last night, number one, if you're the Yankees, be careful what you wish for. The Yankees chose to play the Red Sox if we had gotten to some sort of tiebreaker scenario. That's who they wanted to play. That was the team that they chose. Yeah, we feel the best going to Fenway and playing the Red Sox. We did not have some sort of tie-breaking scenario on Monday. Instead, they met for a playoff game on Tuesday, and the Red Sox beat them. Be careful who you ask for, what you wish for, because they got it last night, and it ended their season. The Red Sox have now won 8 of the last 9 playoff games against the Yankees and have won the last 3 playoff series with the Yankees. Number two takeaway, the biggest play of the game was the out at the plate in the 6th inning. Don't understand that from the Yankees. You had the tying run on base. You had momentum your way. I don't know why you're trying to score from first on a wall baller in a shallow left field. Judge was out by a mile, and that changed the game. It was the only true rally the Yankees put together, and they ran themselves out of it. That was the game changer. Swung the game at that point. Number three for my takeaways last night, what a disappointment Gerrit Cole is for New York. They paid him $324 million, and they'll continue to do so. And down the stretch this year, he had almost a 7 ERA in his last 6 starts, the most important games of the year when you're in a race to the playoffs. At Fenway Park this year, against the most important team if you're a Yankee fan, Cole went 1-3 with a 7 ERA. In his career in playoff elimination games, now 1-4 when the season's on the line. You can't count on him, and you couldn't count on him last night. Only got 6 outs for you, took the loss. On the flip side, Eovaldi has been really good in the playoffs, has been really good against the Yankees, was really good last night when they needed him, and he did so for about 12% of the price of Gerrit Cole. $324 million, Gerrit Cole came up small once again last night. And once Major League Baseball enforced their rules on the spider tack, Gerrit Cole went from a sub-2 ERA to a 4.5 ERA the rest of the season. And now you're on the hook for 7 more years with him. My fourth takeaway from last night, I thought the Yankees' approach at the plate was wrong. I thought it was too aggressive. They swung at the first pitch in half of their at-bats when the Red Sox' weakness is their bullpen. If I was the Yankees, I would try to grind out at-bats, get Eovaldi out of the game as soon as I can because he was on last night, and try to get into that bullpen. Force the Red Sox to get 15 outs from the bullpen. Now, Eovaldi did come out in the 6th. Pitch count was low. I was surprised Cora pulled him when he did, but I thought the Yankees could have done a better job grinding out some of those at-bats, being a little more patient, get them out early, and get into that bullpen. That's when you can score your runs. And that goes hand in hand with my fifth takeaway, that while the Red Sox walked 7 times last night, the Yankees had 0 walks and instead 11 strikeouts. I thought their whole offensive approach was lousy. And it takes me to my biggest issue for the Yankees, which also leads to my concern for the Braves, and that's the reliance on home runs. Last night for the Yankees, they had 6 hits. 2 were home runs. That's how they scored. Otherwise, they had 4 singles. That was it. Couldn't mount much of a rally other than that 6th inning. And while you could come back and say, well, they should have had 2 other home runs, Stanton, right, should have had 2 homers, but that's kind of exactly the point. Number one, they shouldn't have had home runs. That's the ballpark they're playing in. Don't tell me, oh, that's a home run in 29 other stadiums. Okay, well, they're not playing in those 29 other stadiums. You're playing in this stadium. We don't give runs to teams based off of what it could be elsewhere. In this stadium, it's not a home run. And when the Yankees don't hit those home runs, they struggle to score. And we saw that play out last night. If that ball goes over the fence, it's a different game. That's been the Yankees' history over the past decade. If they hit home runs, they'll be fine. If they don't hit home runs, they struggle. And they struggled last night. Now, the Red Sox hit 2 home runs, but also half of their runs did not come on homers. And 4 of the 6 players that scored reached on a walk. Right? They put together good at-bats. They didn't just get up there and mash a homer. You can't rely on home runs in the Braves, and it's why, or you can't rely on home runs in the playoffs, and that's why I'm concerned with the Braves for this series against Milwaukee. The San Francisco Giants had the highest percentage of their runs scored on homers this year, half of them. But the Braves are 4th on that list, 48% of their runs scored on homers, and that's even ahead of the Yankees by percentage points. We played the audio earlier from Jared Diamond, who joined us, and I'm not going to tell you that's untrue. I buy what he's selling there. But what also can be true is that you shouldn't rely on home runs in the postseason. Yes, sure, a higher percentage of runs scoring in the playoffs may come on homers, but it doesn't mean that the teams that rely on home runs are the most beneficial or the ones benefiting the most from that swing come playoff time. As we've seen from the Yankees, I think that's a large reason why they've been to 1 World Series the last 18 years and more recently no World Series the last, 13 years. Too reliant on the home runs. In fact, of the last 10 World Series champions, only one was top 5 in homers. Meanwhile, 9 of those last 10 World Series champions were below league average in strikeouts. Still good hitting teams with good approaches that can put the ball in play and don't just rely on home runs. The Yankees now have been to 1 World Series in the last 18 years. The last time that happened for New York was 1921 when they reached their first World Series. Now, what does this mean for the Braves? Well, again, same concern for Atlanta, the team that is the 4th most reliant on home runs this year. But now you go up against the Brewers, and they're really good pitching staff. It is hard to hit home runs in the playoffs because of the weather, the usage of the bullpen, the stronger pitching staffs, and for the Braves, they go up against the best starting rotation in baseball in Milwaukee. 48% of the Braves' runs scored on home runs this year. Will you be able to do that against that Brewers pitching staff in the playoffs? You won't be able to homer as easily against them, I imagine. It was my concern for the Yankees last night, and I thought it played out. It'll be my concern for the Giants, who has the best team or has the best record in baseball, but is very reliant on home runs. And it'll also be my concern for the Braves against the Brewers when that series begins on Friday. Can you find other ways to win? Can your pitching match theirs? Can you play small ball every once in a while? Can you have some good at-bats, draw some walks, string together a rally? Or will it just come down to your ability to try to homer against the best pitching staff in baseball? The Yankees have tried. Hasn't worked for them over the past decade. Haven't been to the World Series since 2009. They score a bunch of runs in the regular season, get to the playoffs, and can't quite score. And by the way, the Yankees lost in all this is the fact that they had a 2-game lead in the wild card race heading into the final weekend. The Yankees had a 2-game lead with just 3 games to play. That game should have been at Yankee Stadium last night, and then maybe those Stanton fly balls are homers. But they lost 2 out of 3 to Tampa, who had nothing to play for. Tampa used secondary pitchers. They did not even treat those games, you know, like playoff matchups. Tampa already locked up the number 1 seed in the AL, and yet they still won 2 out of 3 against the Yankees in New York. And in their last 4 games of the season, including last night, the Yankees managed only 8 runs total, half of them scored in the 9th inning of games. Their offense let them down. Garrett Cole let them down last night. And the need to hit homers let them down once again in the playoffs. Hopefully, it won't be the same for the Atlanta Braves. Hopefully, the Braves find ways to scratch across runs against that Brewers pitching staff without just simply having to rely on homers. We'll find out starting Friday. When we come back, the second half of the wild card round is tonight. We have the NL wild card game. Dodgers-Cardinals. Is the worst thing for Major League Baseball actually the best thing? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Is the worst thing for Major League Baseball actually the best thing? We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We had some Boston-themed music requested by Dave from Georgetown himself, hence the Aerosmith here, a Boston band.
And the train keeps a rolling for your Red Sox, so
damn
it
right.
Fits.
Sure does. The Red Sox are playing with house money now. They were expected to have a losing season this year. Not only did they make the playoffs, win over 90 games, but they beat the Yankees and ended their season at Fenway. Are you kidding? Now, I'll be upset if and when they lose to the Rays, but that perspective being, hey, this has already been a successful year, especially when you end the Yankees season. Now, I was surprised to see Dirty Water is also in our system here. The song by the band, the Standells, who were a one-hit wonder from the 60s, and that was the song, or is the song, that the Red Sox use after victories as well, based on the Charles River and the Boston Harbor and the nasty water they have there. So good on the music maven around here for having that song in the system. I don't know how well that song is even known outside of Boston, but that's another one about the city itself. My issue, however, is that Dave from Georgetown predicted a Yankees victory yesterday. So what is he doing calling in and requesting Red Sox or Boston-themed music? He was anti-Boston just a day ago. He did predict a Stanton home run, but was wrong on his prediction of a Yankees victory. In fact, speaking of Stanton, I hate to do this, but it's just too good to pass up. John Sterling is the longtime baseball voice, the radio voice of the New York Yankees, and he's iconic in the industry, and he has his own style, and he's got a great voice, and he's a legend. He used to actually broadcast in Atlanta. If you're old enough to remember him back then, he used to do the Atlanta Hawks games. That was like in the 80s, early 80s. And I think he did some Braves games as well, 70s and 80s. But he's been the Yankees radio voice now for over 30 years. He's 83 years old. He was at the game last night. So this was not a case of Sterling trying to watch off the monitor. This was the Stanton ball off the wall in the very first inning. And unfortunately, it confused John last night.
The pitch to Stanton. Drew, there it goes. Deep left, it is high. It is far. It is gone out of the ballpark. A Stantonian home run. Now, what did I do wrong? What did I see wrong? He's at first base.
Oh, poor John. Totally botched it. I didn't even think it was all that close. Now, Vasgersian thought it was gone off the bat as well if you were watching the game on ESPN, but then it hits off the wall. And I didn't even think it was all that high on the wall. And then they field it, and they throw it back in. Maybe look down at his scorebook, but I don't know how you mess all of that up, how you miss everything that just transpired. Now, I cut it short there, but if you continue to listen, his broadcast partner, Susan Waldman, I think she was just being a good teammate, but she backed him up and said, oh, yeah, I thought that was gone, too. We'll see if Aaron Boone challenges this. Challenges it? Did you watch the replay? It wasn't even close. What are you talking about, challenge? She says, oh, I thought that hit off the seats and fell back into the left field. And Sterling then follows up and says, oh, I thought that went out of the ballpark. Went out of the ballpark. It hit off the wall. Poor John. Now, he is 83. I don't want to be too rude to our elders, but nonetheless, you know, the Brewers broadcaster is even older and does a fantastic job without making all the mistakes that Sterling, and this isn't anything new for Sterling. This is going back. He's made mistakes like this for over a decade. You can find them all on YouTube. But a tough one there last night in the first inning. I guess that was an omen of how things would go for the Yankees. Sterling thought it was gone. So did Stanton. He didn't get out of the box, and it was only a single, and helps show how important those home runs are to the Yankees. When they don't get them, they can't score. Now, tonight, we get the NL wildcard game, and this is a fascinating matchup with the Cardinals and the Dodgers because you have, on paper, the best team in baseball going up against the hottest team in baseball over the past month. The Cardinals have won 11 straight road games. The Dodgers have won 15 straight home games. You get a great pitching matchup, Adam Wainwright. The Cardinals have won 8 straight Wainwright starts. The Dodgers have won, and I think this is even going back to the Nationals, 11 straight Scherzer starts. So something's got to give tonight. You have the Cardinals, who are really good on the road, the Dodgers, who are really good at home, and two pitchers who their team hasn't lost one of their starts in at least a month and a half. One of these teams is going to have to lose tonight. And you have the Dodgers, second-best record in baseball, against the Cardinals, who have won 19 of their last 22 games. And it's a one-game elimination. I think it'll be really interesting tonight. Now, if you listened to the show yesterday and it was referenced earlier, I did complain. It was one of my grievances that I aired yesterday about this one-game playoff for the wildcard teams in Major League Baseball. I think it's lousy. It's exciting, sure. I think more exciting would be three of these. Imagine if that was game one, and the Red Sox and the Yankees play again at Fenway tonight, and you try to duplicate last night. Isn't that more exciting? Isn't that more fun? And then maybe we get even a third game. Same with the Dodgers-Cardinals. We'll see how it goes tonight, but you watch it, and you may come away thinking, like, wow, that was a great game. Wouldn't it be even better if you had two more of those, and then we get to the next round? But Major League Baseball, could the worst thing actually be the best thing? Because the Yankees have already been eliminated. And if you're not a Yankee fan, you probably love it. But if you're Rob Manfred, I don't know if you love that. You went into last night knowing, okay, we're going to lose one of these two teams, the Red Sox or the Yankees. And history tells us the two most watched teams, even in the playoffs, are the Red Sox and the Yankees. As much fun as the Cubs were a couple of years ago, as great as the Dodgers have been, the two teams that bring in the highest ratings this time of year have been historically the Red Sox and the Yankees, even when they're not playing one another. And you knew right away, right off the bat, one game in, we're losing one of those teams. Okay, then we get to tonight in the NL, and you have the Dodgers. Big market, big fan base, a polarizing team going up against the Cardinals, who also have a passionate fan base, big market, historic brand, started the minor league system, one of the originators of Major League Baseball, right? The Cardinals. Cardinals, Dodgers, Red Sox, Yankees. If this was the Final Four, it would be ideal. Problem is, it's not the Final Four. It's the wild card round where you get one game out of each of them. What happens tonight if the Dodgers get knocked out and you lose the Dodgers right away? It wouldn't be as severe, but could also hurt to lose the Cardinals tonight compared to, say, the Brewers. If you got Rob Manfred, to be honest, over a couple of cocktails and you asked him, who would you rather have make a long run in the postseason, the Cardinals or the Brewers? Of course it's the Cardinals. I think you'd rather have the Cardinals than even the Giants. But one of those teams is going to be eliminated tonight. And so Major League Baseball, right away, you're chopping off. Right, two big brands, two big names, one way or another here the first 2 days of the playoffs. And it takes big brands, big names to bring change. The reason why I've been teasing that the worst thing could actually be the best thing for Major League Baseball is twofold. The first part, the first potential outcome is a potential change. It takes these big names to lead changes in sports. I'll give you an example. Carson Palmer, in a playoff game about 16 years ago, got hit low against the Pittsburgh Steelers on the opening drive. I remember where I was when I was watching this game. I don't know why this game stood out to me so much. Carson Palmer gets hit below the knees, blows out his knee. He's out on the opening drive for the Bengals in a playoff game. Nothing happened. Then fast forward, I think it was the very next year, maybe 2 years later. Week one, Tom Brady. Somebody goes low on Tom Brady, hits him below the knee. He blows out his knee. He's out for that whole season. You just lost your star. Actually, I think it was 3 years later. It was the follow-up to 2007. That was 2008. And the playoff game for the Steelers-Bengals, I think, was 2005, maybe 2006. So a couple years later, same exact thing happens to Brady. He's out for the year. What do you think happens? The NFL comes up with a rule that offseason that you can't hit the quarterback below the waist, the rule we still have today, or below the knees. So when it happened to Carson Palmer in a playoff game, no less, who cares? It's Carson Palmer. It's the Bengals. It's Carson Palmer. The Steelers advanced instead. That's better for us. Then, fast forward about 2 years, it happens to Tom Brady coming off an MVP-type season in week one, so you go a whole season without him. Patriots miss the playoffs, and you think, oh, that's not good. We got to do something to avoid that happening again. When it happened to Palmer, you didn't care. When it happens to Brady, you care. another rule change in the NFL. The silly playoff rule they used to have, where it was just first score wins no matter what. You kick a field goal after getting the opening kick, you win. The other team doesn't even get the football. And then 2009 came along. NFC title game. What happened? Brett Favre was left on the sideline, never got the football against the Saints. That's when the NFL finally changed the rule because they thought, man, NFC title game, millions of people watching, we just robbed them of the opportunity of seeing Brett Favre with the football in his hands in overtime with a chance to go to the Super Bowl. That would have been better. And they changed the rule at that point. There were countless games decided one way or another before that. Did it matter if Byron Leftwich was left on the sideline while they lost a game, or Chad Pennington, or even go back to Carson Palmer? No, it didn't matter. But when it happened to Brett Favre, and it kept the NFL from having that moment of a Brett Favre in overtime with the football, they said, oh yeah, you know what? We probably should change these rules. It's happened in Major League Baseball. Why did Major League Baseball add replay? Because of a botched home run call between the Mets and the Yankees. Two New York teams. It was, if I remember correctly, a Sunday night baseball game. A lot of people watching. Two New York teams. They botched the call, and they said, oh, yeah, you know what? We can't do that to the Yankees. We should start reviewing these things. It takes those big brands to bring change, just like in the real world. It takes people with that power, big names. Right? If you or I are upset about some rant, nothing's going to happen. If, like, a millionaire with some power is complaining about something, okay, maybe they can get some rule changed or something to be done about it. Man, you need that power. You need that brand. So, if the Dodgers, say the Dodgers lose tonight, and you lose the Yankees on one night, the Dodgers on the next night, if you're Rob Manfred, maybe that's the wake-up call. Like, hold on. This probably isn't the smartest thing to do. It probably would be better if we made sure we got at least a few games out of these teams. And the CBA needs to be renegotiated this offseason. I think, depending on what happens tonight, maybe it doesn't even matter what happens tonight. I think we do get expanded playoffs like we had last year. And we move away from this one-game wild card. Now, the other reason why tonight could be good for Major League Baseball, why I've been saying the worst thing for Major League Baseball could actually be the best thing, is because if you do lose the Dodgers tonight, you lost the Yankees last night, you could lose the Dodgers tonight, they could very well lose this game to Adam Wainwright. And it could be like March Madness. Right, March Madness, we root for the upsets, but then as the tournament goes on, right, people just kind of, you don't really watch the rest of those teams. You would actually, in the end, rather watch a Duke or a Kentucky or a Kansas than a George Mason. But it helps to showcase those other teams. And in this case, who's the best team in the AL? The Tampa Bay Rays. Who's the best team in the NL? It's not the Dodgers. It's the San Francisco Giants. Maybe you'll start to watch a little bit of the Brewers and see how good that pitching staff is this year. I don't know how much Milwaukee baseball you've watched this season. But when you take away those big brands that have been out of the room, at least for a certain percentage of people, they will focus on maybe the Rays and the Brewers and these other teams. People have still the Tampa Bay Rays year after year. But if you lose, Goliath here in Dodgers and Yankees right away, that also sends a pretty good message to the rest of the league. That's not just about these same two or three teams every year that spend millions of dollars. Or you can be like the Tampa Bay Rays or even the San Francisco Giants and put together a scrappy team that goes a long way. The worst thing for Major League Baseball, which would be losing the Yankees and the Dodgers, could turn out one way or another to be the best thing for them. And I hope the Dodgers lose tonight. I'll be pulling for the Cardinals. And I hope it's another exciting game like last night. When we come back, I got some thoughts. I want to circle back to the match number 5. We were talking about this earlier with Jeremy Schilling. And I got some thoughts on this whole match 5 because it breaks one of the rules that we have around here on the Morrow Midday Show. So we'll get to that coming up. Plus, a bit of a crisis in the sports world here in the area. We'll get to that as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, my thoughts on the match 5 because it breaks a rule here on the Morrow Midday Show. Get to that right here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, search ESPN Radio Charleston, wherever you get your podcasts. There's a bit of a crisis going on here locally. And they're gonna, I know Bobby will be talking about this coming up on Fan Talk about how you can help solve it, but apparently there's a referee, an official shortage for high school football here in the area. They need refs. They need officials. Joe, can we count on you to help solve the problem? Get out there and throw some flags around.
If I was available on Friday night.
Yeah, you would be willing to do it if you had the time?
Yeah, I'll probably go give it a shot.
I would
see what they really go through.
Yeah.
See how it is.
I would do it if I was available. I got Citadel football I got to worry about instead each weekend. I would be willing to get out there and give it a try. It would probably suck because everybody would be yelling at you. But growing up, that's what I always did. Those were my summer jobs. I've always said I've been lucky that I've never had a job outside of sports. Therefore, I've never really had a job. I mean, these aren't really jobs. I get to talk about sports all the time. But growing up, that was what I did. There was a little time when I worked at like a farmer's market. That was a bit of a pain. I would do that on and off for a little while for a friend's father. But otherwise, I always worked in sports, and that was always my summer job when I was home from school or even when I was in high school. I used to umpire baseball in town. I used to referee basketball, and I eventually became the head of the officials. Big deal. I was the head of the officials for the local football league. Now, that was just kids. Wasn't higher than, I think, probably middle school. I never did, like, high school or anything. I was in high school myself and then college. But I used to referee, and that's, you know, it's different than doing high school games. But I liked it. It was fun. I always liked that stuff. I liked umpiring baseball. I liked refereeing basketball. Football as well. Now, of course, you always run into the terrible parents, even at that level. I mean, we used to do kids like as young as third and fourth grade, their games. And the parents, coaches, were brutal. It's like, really, you know, lighten up, buddy. But, and I can only imagine what it'd be like for a high school ref. But I enjoyed it. It'd be fun to be out there. If I had nothing to do on the weekends, instead of traveling and broadcasting games, I would try to. I don't know what the criteria, how it works. I'll have to listen to Fan Talk this afternoon. But sign me up. I would be happy to help go out there and officiate a game. I would be honest with you. I could be easily persuaded as well. Meet me before the game. We'll see what happens. But the best was always in basketball, of course. The most fun call to make was the charge. I mean, you see that with officials getting into it now. Either the charge or the block. That was always the most fun call to make. And you would even do, when you did the blocking call, when people weren't sure, is that going to be a charge or a block? And you do the little, like, one-foot skip. You skip forward on one foot, and you really throw your hips into it, and you jam your arms toward your hips. Oh, that was the best call to make. In football, it was always the completion. You're running down the sidelines. They try to make a toe-tapping catch along the sidelines, and you come running in and, you know, make the gesture like you're catching a football or like you're pulling something to your chest. That was the most fun call to make in football. And then in baseball, it was always the bang-bang play at, like, second base. Cutting down a runner, trying to turn it into a double or, like, a stolen base. And I never really got into it, but one of my buddies that I umpired with, his thing was always to get a point, right? Point that they have the baseball, take a few little shuttle steps forward, and then deliver a real punch out, a strong punch. Those were the most fun calls to make. But I enjoyed that growing up, and I would be happy to help nowadays if I could. I'd get out there and throw a few flags around for a high school game. Earlier, we were talking with Jeremy Schilling as we talk golf with him every Wednesday. And it has become official this week that we are going to get the fifth edition of the match, this time between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. And this kind of goes against a rule of the show. I've always said by the fifth time you get to something, it's time for a change. I'm already out on the match. I know we've heard from listeners who disagree with me. The last time they did this was enough for me. I've lost interest. I really don't care. Koepka and DeChambeau could be interesting if they're willing to go at it again. But they've seemed to have kind of hugged and made up lately. We'll see what type of fireworks we get. That's what it's going to come down to. I could care less. I couldn't care less, I should say. That's one of my pet peeves, and I almost just screwed it up. I couldn't care less about those two just going out there and golfing for 12 holes. I don't care. I'm not going to sit down on a Black Friday, and watch these two play 12 holes. I don't care. I'll go to the local golf course if I want to just sit there and watch people play randomly. Now, I got toasters to buy on discount on Black Friday instead of watching those two. if the two of them are going at it and continue to have this like hatred for one another, then it could be intriguing. But by the time you get to the fifth version of something, it's time for a change. We see it in Hollywood all the time. It's Halloween. It's time to watch scary movies, and horror films always go on these long film series. For Friday the 13th, you know what the fifth one was named? New Beginnings. Because they realized, yeah, you know what? We've reached the fifth one. We can't keep doing the same thing. It's time to change it. And they introduced a new killer other than Jason Voorhees. It was a terrible movie, but they tried. In Halloween, number five, Halloween number five, that was when they tried to switch. Well, originally in the fourth one, they were going to switch to the little girl, and she was supposed to be the bad one. She was supposed to be the killer in the fifth one. They changed it, but that was the whole idea. They were going to have somebody different for Halloween number five. Then they went back to Michael Myers. They also did number three without Michael Myers. They realized by the third film, like, yeah, let's do something different. By the fifth one, they had different plans. Then they introduced a cult. Then they took 6 years off. After the fifth one, they said, okay, no more movies. Then 6 years later, they said, okay, more movies. But by the fifth one, they said, okay, enough of this. Saw number five. You know what happened in the fifth Saw? Of course not, because no one saw that terrible movie. But in the fifth one, same idea. They had a new killer. They moved on from Jigsaw. They had somebody else take the lead. In Rocky V, Rocky retires in Rocky V and starts training Tommy Gunn. No longer is it about Rocky, it's about a different boxer. Terminator number 5 wasn't a sequel, it was a reboot. They said, okay, we can't continue on the same storyline. We have to kind of start over. We're going to reboot the series. James Bond, Sean Connery, was done after number 5. They brought in a new Bond. Once you get to 5, that's when you have to look around and say, okay, enough of this. We have to do something different. I guess you could say this is kind of different because they're only doing 12 holes and it's one-on-one, Koepka versus DeChambeau. But the point being, it's a rule on the show. Once you get to the fifth time of doing something, it's kind of time to move on. The audience has about 4 in them. They'll watch that movie 4 times. Then you want to sell me on a fifth Saw? It's like, yeah, I'm kind of out. I'm all sawed out at this point. I saw the first 4 films. They got worse and worse. We don't need a fifth one. Right, Rocky V, how many times can you see Rocky get into the ring? By the fifth one, they said, okay, we have to go a different way here. We have to have a different angle than just Rocky training for another fight. How about he retires and starts to train somebody else, and we see Rocky in that different role? Oh, okay, this will get people to the theaters. And as a viewer, you say, oh, Rocky V, who cares? Oh, wait a minute. Now he's a trainer? That's intriguing. I'll watch that. Instead of just watching Rocky go out there and take a bunch of headshots against somebody at the end of the movie. Who cares? We've seen it 4 times. It's the same way I feel about the match. We've seen this over and over again. Sure, it's a little bit different now, but by the time you get to this fifth one, it's enough already. We're all matched out at this point. At least I am. I know people disagree with me, but I have really little interest for this whole event. By the time you get to the fifth edition of something, it's usually time to just move on. We'll see if this is the last time they do it. I doubt it is. We'll wrap up your Wednesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This thing right here is letting all the ladies know what guys talk about. You know, the finer things in life. Check it out. Ooh, that dress so scandalous, and you know I never handle it. So you're shaking that thing like who's the ish with a look in your eyes so devilish. You like to dance on the hip hop spots and you cruise to the cruise like connect the dots. Not just urban, she liked the pop because she was living la vida loca. She had dumps like a truck.
Fun and funky finish to your Wednesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I've shared it before. I'll share it again to embarrass myself. The first ever CD I bought was this one from Cisco. And my mother always hates, she says, you share too much. We're an open book around here, and it's embarrassing, but I have no problem saying that Unleash the Dragon by Cisco was the first CD I ever remember buying back in 1999. This was a hit back then. And the album was Unleash the Dragon, and Cisco had, if you don't remember, he had dyed his hair like silver. He had like silver hair. And he wore a dragon necklace. That was his whole thing. I don't know. The album was named Unleashed Dragon. So, of course, I then got a dragon necklace as well. And I used to have this dragon necklace that I used to wear because of Cisco. I was so cool back then. You should have saw me. Oh, let me tell you. I was the coolest kid around. buying Cisco CDs and wearing dragon necklaces because of him.
Or so you thought.
Yeah, I was the coolest kid in town. Fortunately, I did not ever want to, I don't think, ever wanted to dye my hair silver like Cisco. I don't think I went that far. But that was the first CD, at least that I remember. That's the first CD I remember going out and buying. I had to have that CD from Cisco. I don't think he had an, I think he was, you know, are there one-hit wonders in like the rap world? I don't know. I think that was the only song he really had. Looking him up now, by the way, his other albums were Return of the Dragon and Last Dragon. So he was really into dragons for some reason. And, yep, first album. Joe, what was the first record or cassette, whatever, first album you remember buying back in the day?
I want to say it was the, no, actually, Dynasty by Kiss was a Christmas present.
Oh.
I would probably say it's The Game, the album The Game by Queen.
Oh, okay. There you go. Not quite as embarrassing, I would say, as Cisco and the Thong Song. But that was a hit, let me tell you, back in the day. Hey, if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com, through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or even our free app. Head over to the App Store, search ESPN Charleston, and download the app today to be able to take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go through the app so that you can get great anecdotes like that about my dragon necklace from back in the day. You can also find the show on demand through that app or also online. Just click on our show page at charlestonsportsradio.com. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Wednesday afternoon. Before we go, I mentioned this earlier. Let me get to this before we leave. This whole Matt Ryan thing. There was this story that was created this week that, much like Julio Jones, Matt Ryan apparently wants out of Atlanta. And he has since pushed back on that. And Matt Ryan came out and said, no, you know, that's not true. Whoever said that is inaccurate. I love it here. I want to finish here with the Falcons. Yada, yada, yada. Right? Matt Ryan denied that whole report. Josh Kendall, friend of the show, who I like, I think he does a really good job, he now covers the Falcons. He put together a whole article yesterday for The Athletic, which I think this whole notion is silly. They had this whole article of Matt Ryan, and Matt Ryan's compared in the article to Matt Stafford, right, trying to get out of Detroit and going to the Rams. We got this all wrong with Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan would be doing the Falcons a favor if he went into that front office and demanded a trade. It's his salary that is holding back the Falcons right now. If the Falcons came out and said before the season, we're not going to be very good, I think things would be a little different right now. But the hope was that they would compete this year. They haven't been able to, and in large part because they're really handcuffed by that salary. They were stuck on the fence this offseason, unable to go in either direction, rebuild or restock, because of the Matt Ryan salary that they couldn't get out from under. Now, if they do trade him, they probably would still have to pay some of his salary. I don't think any team would be willing to take on that contract like the Falcons were. But it's like, you know, the classic bit of, you know, like, you know, you don't break up with me, I break up with you. Similar here, like, yeah, please. Please, get out of here. Right? We can't get rid of you. You have to get rid of yourself. It's like Costanza trying to get fired, trying to be such a terrible employee to get fired by the Yankees. If I'm the Falcons, that's like what I'm hoping for. Good, I hope he's not happy here. I hope he demands a trade. Let's try to unload him. Because all due respect to Ryan, who always has come off like a really great guy, gave the Falcons some great years. Best quarterback they've had in franchise history because Vic didn't last long enough and Matt Ryan got to a Super Bowl. But at this point in his career, he just doesn't have it anymore. He's 19th right now in passing yards. Not dynamic enough. You know, the offense under Arthur Smith has not looked nearly as good so far a month in as we were expecting. If I'm Arthur Blank or anyone in that front office and I hear this rumor originally, oh, Matt Ryan's not happy, he may want out, I would say, okay, good. All right, let's turn off the air conditioning in his, you know, in the locker room and go out and slash his tires and do whatever, right? Start taking his favorite snack out of the vending machine. Let's get him out of here. Probably be better off. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to podcasts. Right, by the way, comparing him to Matt Stafford right now, I mean, that's crazy. Not even in the same category. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we'll say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon for a Throwback Thursday. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.